नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamil, text number 26, this morning. Bhunjana,
Bhunjana,
Prapiban,
Khadan,
Bolakam,
Sneha,
Yanvrittaha, Bojayan, Okay, I'm going to sing this to a different little tune, if I can remember it, just a little. Anything? Bhunjana Pratibankadan,
Bhunjana Pratibankadan,
Balakam Snehayan Prita,
Balakam Snehayan Prita,
Bojayan Payayan Mudho,
Bojayan Payayan Mudho,
Navida Gattamantakam,
Navida
Bhunjana Pratibandhadam,
Bhunjana Pratibandhadam,
Balakam Snehayandrita,
Balakam Snehayandrita,
Bojayan Payayan Mudho,
Bojayan Payayan Mudho,
Navida Gattamantakam,
Navida
Bhunjana Pratibandhadam,
Bhunjana Pratibandhadam,
Balakam Snehayan Dritta,
Balakam Snehayan Dritta,
Bhojayan Payayan Mudho,
Bhojayan Payayan Mudho,
Naveda Gattamantakam,
Naveda Gattamantakam,
Bhunjana Pratibandhadam,
Balakam Snehayan Dritta,
Bhojayan
Payayan Mudho,
Veda
Gatamantakam,
Bhunjana
Pratibandhadam, Balakam Snehayan Dritta,
Bhojayan Payayan Mudho,
Naveda Gatamantakam, Bhunjana Pratibandhadam,
Balakam Snehayan Dritta,
Bhunjanaha,
Bhunjanaha,
while eating,
Pratibhan,
while drinking, Kadan, while chewing, Balakam,
unto the child,
Snehayantataha, being attached by affection, Bhojayan,
feeding,
Payayan,
giving something to drink.
Murdha,
the
foolish man.
Na,
not.
Veda,
understood.
Agatam,
had arrived. Antakam,
death.
Translation. When Ajamil chewed food and ate it, he called the child to chew and eat it. And when he drank, he called the child to drink also. Always engaged in taking care of the child and calling his name Narayan, Ajamil could not understand that his own time was now exhausted and that death was upon him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is kind to the conditioned soul, although this man completely forgot Narayan. He was calling his child, saying, Narayan, please come, eat this food. Narayan, please come, drink this milk. Somehow or other, therefore, he was attached to the name Narayan. This is called Ajnata Sukriti. Although calling for his son, he was unknowingly chanting the name of Narayana, and the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so transcendentally powerful that his chanting was being counted and recorded. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Vibhisesa Sunya Vari Paschacharaya Sitarane Om Angyanam Timaram Dasya Dhananjana Shilakaya Chatsuru Nirikam Jayam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bheva Chapati Tamam Abhavyo Vaishnavayo Namo Namaha. Yes, so here's a picture of an idiot. From a Vedic point of view, mudha means idiot, fool, stupid. He's 88 years old. So he should know that at any time death can come. He's not like surprised. So he's 88 years old, and he's got this little toddler kid who speaks with broken language. And what's that about? When they start that, about two, so maybe even indistinct speech. I love you. So cute. Remember, they do cute. So when so he's so attached to this little kid. So it says here that he's like, oh, just spend all this time with him. So maybe, come on, take that, have some of this. This is really good. You like this one. Everything you're putting in his mouth. It was just like extremely fond of this little child, Narayan. So this looks like a picture of disaster. So he's all absorbed in this, not thinking of anything. But so he did not know, he couldn't understand that his end had come, his time had arrived of death. So yet, at the other hand, below the surface, we can't see there's something else going on. As Prabhupada said, his chanting was being counted and recorded. Counted by whom? Recorded by whom? Who's listening? Who's taking the record? Had to be somehow or other the agents of Narayan were doing this. But certainly it wasn't the Yamadutas, because they didn't count it. But something was happening here. It wasn't really like a devotee who's chanting the holy name, because he's forgotten Narayan. But still, somehow or other, there was this little trace of something that made his call his child Narayan. Prabhupada mentions in the previous purport, it's the customary in Hindu society for parents to give their children names like Krishna Das, Govinda Das, Narayan Das, Vrindavan Das. Prabhupada, one of Prabhupada's own sons, is Vrindavan Das. Well, they do that. So he was always saying, all right, please come. Taste this. Drink this. You like this. This is nice. So somehow or other, he was attached to the name Narayan, and Prabhupada said this is called Ajnata Sukriti. Although calling for his son, he was unknowingly chanting the name of Narayan. Ajnata means that which is unknown or unrecognized. But Sukriti means a pious activity, but in this context, unknown devotional service. You are performing devotional service, but you don't know it. And many times, this is where it begins. It's generally seen that if somebody comes to Krishna consciousness, that it was carried over from a previous life. But where does it start? So many times it starts like this, a Jnata Sukriti. You're doing something that's devotional service, but you don't even know it. That's why we like to do certain things, like, for example, we go out in the street and chant Hare Krishna, just to amuse the crowds. And sometimes drunks come and they dance and chant Hare Krishna. Even they're making fun of us. They're not doing any devotion. They don't know what they're doing. But still, that chanting can be recorded and counted. That unknown devotional service. There was a famous incident in the early days of the movement, the temple at 22nd Avenue. It was just this little narrow storefront, rundown section of town. Prabhupada was down the Lower East Side, and that time it was full of street people. And of course, there was the beginning of the counterculture. The hippies were there because it was a cheap place to live. Anyway, that's where the place opened up. So this little storefront, it had been a shop, but in the back there was a toilet and a sink and everything. And one time, there was a class going on. This guy from the street barged in, dirty clothes, smelly, obviously a street person, and from the look on his face, not in his right mind. And he just he walked up to the front of the room, and he put down some rolls of paper towels, and he left. Everybody was laughing, and Prabhupada says, "No, don't laugh." He says, "This is the beginning of a devotional service." Huh? That's what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, "Don't laugh at him. This is the beginning of his devotional service." But he didn't know what Hare Krishnas were or anything like that. But something, some impulse made him go, and he got some paper towels or toilet paper. Maybe they were rolls of toilet paper, I can't remember. He brought them and just put them there and left. That's all. Never saw him before or after. He did. He just did it as an impulse. So sometimes it's like this. I remember a few years ago, about 10 years ago, when the restaurant was at the other end of South Street, and Hari Asa told me there was this lady that wanted to talk to me. Not the kind of person that was usually coming to the Krishna consciousness movement. Her husband was some kind of a business executive, and she was definitely, you know, a suburban, high-income lady, nice hair, perfect, earrings perfect, everything perfect, you know. And she Chinhui coming to talk to me because she'd been diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, everything was a little risky. And then she was going to all these new age people for alternative healing modalities. And they were basically telling her that cancer was her fault because she hated herself, so therefore she got cancer, which I don't think was. So anyway, she wanted to talk to me about, because she said, you know, 20 years ago, the devotee was using the very early days of our movement. We went out in the streets every day and chanted. That's all we did, the whole day long. At a certain point, we were at one street corner all the time. And gradually, the police liked it better. So we stood at one street corner and chanted every day. About the whole temple, just go out and chat. We didn't have deity worship at that time. It's a very simple deity worship. You know, go out and chat all day long, distribute magazines. And then we stood at the corner of Broad and Chestnut for a year or so. And then decided to try another location and went and stood at what was then the Reading Railroad Station. Especially because it had an overhead, so when it rained, you had a dry place. Well, he went two blocks away. It was like just a few blocks away, and nobody ever heard of us. So then gradually we started walking. We'd have the kirtan party, and we'd chant, and we'd walk down one street, and slowly, you know, and actually the police liked it better when we were moving. So, I had to go to this. Go to court finally and sue the city in order to be able to it was recognized without getting harassed. So we're moving. Anyway, so she says, you know, so she was talking about a time that was when I saw her. Yeah, it must have been 15 years before. She said she used to hear the devotees chanting. And you hear there was a kirtan party, and she used to run after the kirtan party. She had trouble keeping up. I was always trying to get guys to go slower, and everybody wanted to run and rush and everything. You know, but she had trouble keeping because she had high heel shoes on and everything. But she always used to follow the chanting party, try to listen to the chanting and chant herself. And she said, you know, she did this around the time. And I, of course, I had no idea. We're out there in Broad and Chestnut, we're chanting Hare Krishna, sometimes wondering, is this really doing any good? She was following. And then, you know, so, you know, I just talked to her about chanting. And chanted the Hare Krishna mantra with her. I never saw her. And so here she is. She's, for some reason, she doesn't know. She doesn't even know who we are. She doesn't know anything about our philosophy. She doesn't really have even a spiritual life. And she probably went to church every Sunday as a social duty. But somehow or other, when she heard the devotee, she was running after them. So sometimes it's very... Another time, also in the very early days of the movement, when we first showed up, we were on television a lot. People were trying to figure out what was going on with the youth of America, so we go on television programs. And sometimes we bring paintings from our temple and put them behind us on easels and everything. So at that time we had a painting, not this one, but another painting of Radha and Krishna on a swing. And so we went somewhere and was interviewed by somebody, talked a little bit about Krishna consciousness. And we always bring a lot of prasadam cookies or things like that. We hand them out afterwards to the crew and everybody, you know, we're going to distribute these prasadams possible. And there's this one guy who was a cameraman. And he went up to this picture of Radha and Krishna, he says, you know, you have really good art. He says, I really like this painting. He says, your art is really nice. I wasn't ever so quite impressed with it, you know. This is really like it. He's looking at this picture of Krishna. And he says, look at those brush strokes. And he starts stroking Krishna's shoulder. I talked to him. I said, I kind of changed the... He kept talking about the artistic techniques, you know. And I tried to change the subject matter, to change the topic to the subject matter of the painting and not the technique of the painting. But he really backed off from that, you know. But it's still, but you could tell he was attracted to Krishna. He just couldn't say it to himself, you know. And he took some prasadam. So people who take prasadam, they don't know what it is. That's agyata sukriti. Another form of agyata sukriti is that say you're the kind of person that helps people in distress. You're a pious person. Materially, you do good deeds. And so if somebody is stranded by the highway, and obviously they have a flat tire, their car is broken down, you're the kind of person you pull up and ask if you can help. Most people zoom by. They don't care. So, one time we were devotees, and our car had broken down, and a guy stopped to help us change the tire. He didn't know anything about devotees, didn't know who we were, anything like that, but he helped us change the tire. So because he was doing this for devotees, that wasn't just a nice, a good deed in the material sense. That was a gathering sukriti. That was some devotional service. Like the guy with the rolls of towels, towards taking out. So in so many ways, people get an opportunity, even very slightly, of chanting Krishna's name and so on, or doing some other unknown, unrecognized, or unacknowledged devotional service. Is a gap of 50. So that means even if nothing else happens in this life, next life there's some beginning of something, and they'll follow up. So somehow, of course, with Narayan, with Ajamiya, it was a little different. He had already been worshiping the Lord, and he fell down and got really covered by ignorance. But somehow there was something there. And the time of death is coming, but he's attached now to the name Narayan. Although who he means, the denotation of his term is not the Lord, but his son. Still he's attached to the name, and he's saying that and the time of death is coming. So the time of death is always the crucial time, because this comes up in the Bhagavad Gita. At the end of the seventh chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked Krishna a number of questions. At the beginning of the eighth chapter, he asked a number of questions based on what Krishna said at the end of the seventh chapter. At the end of the seventh chapter, he just mentions that those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods of all method of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Lord, even at the time of death. So Krishna mentioned this Prayana Kale Api, can know me at the time of death. So then in the beginning of the eighth chapter, Krishna says, Prayana kale chakatam jneyosti. Niyatatmana. How can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? So this is one of these questions. How can this be done? Here it says, Prabhupada says here, now the word prayana kale in this verse is very significant because whatever we do in life will be tested at the time of death. Arjuna is very anxious to know of those who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness what should be their position at that final moment. At the time of death, all the bodily functions are disrupted and the mind is not at all in proper condition. Thus disturbed by the bodily situation, one may not be able to remember the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Kulashekar, a great devotee, prays, "My dear Lord, just now I am quite healthy, and it is better that I die immediately so that the swan of my mind can seek entrance at the stem of your lotus feet." This is one of these, this poetry. So the swans, they get the food off the bottom of the lake, and the lotuses are rooted in the bottom of the lake, and so they burrow with their beaks down at the roots of the lotus flowers. So he says, "I want my mind like this swan to be rooted at your lotus feet, feet which are like lotus flowers. So how can I do it?" So he says, "Let me do it now while I'm healthy and in good shape. It will be easier for my mind to be in this way, buried in remembrance of your lotus feet. So that would be better. Better let me die immediately." So Prabhupada cites this example. So then when he goes on, Krishna, he's answering the various questions, and then he says, fifth verse, antakale chamameva smaram mukva kalevaram ya prayati sa madhavam yati nasti atra samshayaha. And whosoever at the end of life quits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature, of this there's no doubt. That's what he says. The Prabhupada says, in this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who is constantly Krishna conscious is also purest of the pure. The word smaram, remembering, is important. So Krishna is in pure spiritual existence. So we attain that same nature. So that way we can also associate with Krishna. We right now, our identity is material. Krishna is spiritual. There's a barrier. You cannot walk into fire. You'll get burnt. But somehow or other, you can become fire. You can enter the fire. So if we want to become close to Krishna, who's spiritual, we have to become spiritual ourselves. And then, right now, so the process of bhakti yoga is the process of spiritual. Even though we have material bodies and mind, by the process of Krishna consciousness, we spiritualize our senses. And then by remembering Krishna, then we can also attain his nature. You don't take another material body, but just pure spiritual existence. So here's the general rule. The word smaran, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life if one wants to achieve success at the end of his life. This process of remembering Krishna is successful, is essential. Therefore, one should chant constantly, incessantly, the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya is advised that one be as tolerant as a tree. There may be so many impediments for a person who's chanting Hare Krishna. Difficulties, you know, mothers, whatever. There may be so many impediments. And what to do? He says, tolerating all these impediments, one should continue to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. So that at the end of life, one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. Well, people don't know this. You know, their idea of a good death is to die unconscious. In their sleep. Or, if you're in the hospital, so doped on morphine that you can't know anything. You're not conscious. They don't know what's coming. They're terrified. And so, people whose lives are immersed in just material things, then death comes. Like him, they're surprised. They didn't figure this into their plans. It's the big spoiler. And they deal with it by forgetting it. Or try to forget it. Of course, you never are successful, but they try, because there's always in the material world, if you go down people's layers of consciousness, you'll find almost a layer of pure terror, which they can't deal with and they don't talk about.
I know this sounds strange, but I just cannot understand how death can be so painful.
Well, first of all, you're often, it's painful to have your arms torn off. It's painful to get in an automobile accident and look at the mess, huh?
But doesn't have to be painful. Well, there's different degrees of pain.
Well,
some people may just get a scratch.
Well, it's true.
Like I fell on my arm about a year ago, and I couldn't tell you violently for a month. It happened. It was very painful. I thought it broke it, but I was so thankful to God because it could have been worse.
The general thing is that if we are depending upon our material bodies, material relationships for our happiness, mm-hmm. when those are taken away from us, mm-hmm. we are going in a state of extreme distress. Because no more tongue, no more eyes, no more ears, no more hands, no more legs. Everything is taken away. The floor is pulled out from under you.
It sounds starting to feel painful, you know.
I think it's quite terrifying for most people. If, however, one is concentrated on Krishna mm-hmm. and has relationships that don't depend upon the course of material nature, then it's different. Depends on what our attachment is. But believe me, if we are attached to material things, material enjoyment, there's a great deal of distress. It's true, there's a difference between pain and suffering. You know. So, it is not that a devotee doesn't feel pain, but if one doesn't identify with the material body, they say, this is happening to me, you know.
Then he's not suffering.
Yeah. But sometimes pain gets very intense. But you may notice, like, say, if you have a really bad headache, Suddenly, you know, there's something happening outside, like a car accident. You pay attention to that car. All that time you're paying attention to that car accident, you didn't notice your headache. As soon as it's over, then boom, you feel it again. So why? Because your attention is strongly elsewhere. So you can just, like the pain of the headache doesn't register. Because your mind is absorbed in something else. So actually, if one's mind is absorbed in Krishna, there are all these other distresses that don't register. But that's, it has to be intense. In other words, you can't have a drag of that. You can't be disturbed by fear. Krishna goes on to say, whatever state of being one remembers, when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Yam yam vapi smaram bhav chajati ante kalevaram tam tam. He will get that same state. According to the nature of his consciousness, when leaving the body, that'll determine is where he goes. Prabhupada says, the process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person at the end of his life quits his body, thinking of Krishna, attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. And then Prabhupada discusses the danger of pet ownership. Suppose you're really attached to your dog. And that's what you love. So at the time of death, you think about what you're most attached to. You're thinking about your dog. You're saying, the lady is saying, Fifi, Fifi, who's going to walk my Fifi? That means somebody's going to walk her. He tells a story here of Bharat Maharaj. This is a story in Bhagavatam. Maharaj Bharata, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of life. So in his next life, he was transferred into the body of a deer. This is the story in Bhagavatam. A very great king and a great devotee left his kingdom, went to the forest, practiced severe austerities and penances and everything. But there was this little baby deer, a fawn. And you know how cute deer are. So cute. Especially when they're babies. Big eyes and everything. The mother had gotten frightened by a lion and run away and left this little baby, this fawn behind. So he owned this poor little deer. He's so helpless. So took him back and fed him some milk and those. And then he became like really attached to the cute thing. And looked at his eyes and how his little baby and how he wobbled around so cute. He became really loved the deer. Although he was so spiritually advanced, still. And then one night, the deer didn't come, wasn't around. He was gone. And what had happened to him? And he started wandering in the night looking for the deer. And as he's stumbling in the darkness, he fell over a cliff and he died. So because he was thinking of the deer at the time of death, his next body was a deer, a stag. Although, because he was spiritually advanced, he still had human consciousness. And so, when sages would gather in the forest to have spiritual discussions or chant Hare Krishna, there would be this stag hanging out with him, watching them. And then finally, then his next birth was human again, and then he went back to Godhead. But there's a whole story in the Bhagavatam of these three lives. Maharaj Bharata, and then as the deer, and then another one called Jantaka. Read that story. It's a very interesting story. So Prabhupada says, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. And so this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one to transfer to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental, spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the time, at the end of one's life. Well, this is Krishna's basic instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, that one should do this. One has to be prepared. Think of it as the final exam. There are two, there are students that study. And then they're saying, and I cram it at the last minute. And so one should be prepared. One thinks, okay, I'll just do so many things the last minute and I'll think of Krishna. You find that it's more difficult than you thought. So these are the things we have to do. And therefore, Arjuna, Krishna says, you should always think of me, and that is in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting, because he was a warrior and his duty was to fight on behalf of religious principles. And so right, even in the middle, it's not like you've got a peaceful deathbed and everybody. In the middle of a battle, that may be very distracting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will obtain me without doubt. So the nature of Krishna consciousness is actually as possible to, in all circumstances, to remember Krishna. So we should know this. When Srila Prabhupada was leaving his body, devotees were all around him, and I remember he said to us, he was getting very thin, you know, he had stopped eating and everything. His kidneys were failing and so on. So he said, don't think this won't happen to you. Because people think, you know, oh yeah, this is not a problem for me. I once had somebody coming here do a paper for college about Krishna consciousness, and she wanted to talk to me. Somehow or other this topic came up, and she got very uncomfortable, and she said that she was convinced that she wasn't going to die. I was astonished, and this is a person in college, right? I had someone be so dumb. And she said, I just figured that, you know, when it becomes an issue for me, they will have solved the problem. So people generally in America suffer from a cultural condition, a kind of a collective mental disease called narcissism. I'm so wonderful and I'm so special that nothing bad can happen to me. People only die in Africa or Iraq or something, you know, but I'm okay. I'm so special, I'm so wonderful, that somehow this won't happen to me. This is a fact. This is a thing. They say that when they get young people are like that. As you get older, it becomes harder to think like this. But when you're very young, people think like this, and it's a well-known fact that when soldiers go into battle, they're feeling sorry for the guy next to him. They really think that somehow, really, I've got some protection, so nothing bad is going to happen to me. And they're really surprised. And that's why usually the amount of time a soldier can stay in sustained combat is something like 3 weeks before they're not a physical casualty. I mean, in modern warfare, they're not a physical casualty, they're a mental casualty. Unless they're kshatriyas, but there aren't any of those really. Okay, questions, comments?
Can you sing that melody again?
Okay. Let me go back to this verse. Okay, this is a more, you know, sweet, less technical sort of a thing. Bhunjana pratibankhadan malakam snehayantitaha bhojayam ayayam mudho navidhagastam antakam. I usually can't remember it. Somehow or other it came to my mind. You know. There are different tunes for all different meters. And people. Prabhupada just do it the way we usually do. But then once you get this in your head, you can't get out. Bhunjayan pattiban kadam balakam snehayantita bhojayan vayayan mudo avidagatamantakam.
When you have the long line over you, does that mean that the youth will be longer?
Yeah, they're short syllables and long syllables, and it doesn't mean long syllables really means like it's just twice as long. Mm-hmm. If you say the short A is just always. In Sanskrit, what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. Not like English, the same symbol on the page can have so many different sounds, and you can't tell. In Sanskrit, and then the long A, then the I is pronounced E, 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 and the U is pronounced U, U, U. And then you have the diphthongs, like this E here, the English E is actually A, A, I, O, O. Those are diphthongs, two vowels together. We'll sit down and talk about it sometime. Yeah, so just it's just the length of the syllable, or the length of the vowel. Same sound. And also we have this R with the dot under it. There's none in this verse. That's a vocalic R. It's actually a vowel. And usually people say it's pronounced like R I. But different parts of India, some people say ooh.
What about when you have a dot over the in or below the end?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
This idea of Adamula's Pajnata Sukriti, I noticed that in the next commentary, Prabhupada cites a passage from Sri Goswami's commentary, which is something most people say about just the translated.
You can give that class, right?
No,
tomorrow. Tomorrow, yeah, but then Monday, you know. Do I get that class? Okay.
Saturday,
yeah.
But he just makes his point about he's calling it a holy name, but then commenting on that, which that line is actually on different commentators on this verse. Commenting on that, at least Bhakshita and I think some others make the point that what he wasn't only calling Narayan his name, but what he was doing was essentially calling it, reciting a bunch of Upachara mantras. He was saying, you know, Narayana, come take this.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
One of them was Narayana, you know, Atragashastapishtami, come over here, I'll give you that.
Well, that's why Prabhupada talks about serving. Well, we'll talk about this Saturday.
Okay.
I know what he's saying. It'll take a little while to explain it, yeah. Because it says he was worshipping Narayana Shila.
Yeah.
So
what
the
point?
Well, in the ceremonies of worship, mm-hmm. when you're feeding the deity, you say your mantra with the deity's name. Here's food, here's water. Here's and you say the deity's name. So he was actually using the same words that he used in worship for the deity, for his son.
Okay.
So it became a sort of monthly food.
Yeah.
What he's saying, you know, this is what you do for Artie, offer food.
Not exactly Artie, but there's things go on while the doors are closed. You don't sleep. It's just sort of like that, though.
Because there's
more things in him, because there's some like subtle memory, I think, that's being revived here.
But how can he throw all that turning away and calling over the prostitutes, and he was so focused? I mean, like, when someone is so focused on Krishna, how can that happen?
I have seen it happen.
But it doesn't seem like it wouldn't happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it does sometimes. It does sometimes. You have to be very advanced before there's no chance of that. Prabhupada said that as long as we're in the material world, we should consider ourselves in danger. Don't ever think, okay, now I'm so fixed in Krishna consciousness, and then you get careless or something.